Gentlemen and ladies, delighted to have back Tom Nuango, very popular guest, the man behind, and I always get the three G's in the wrong order because I'm kind of autistic that way, but I think it starts guns, goats, and gold, but I've probably got it wrong. Which one is it, Tom?
You got it reversed. That's gold, goats, and guns.
Gold, goats, and guns. Three Billy Goats. I loved it. We used to have a childhood story called The Three Billy Goats Gruff and a Troll Under the Bridge. Boy, is this not the economic environment for trolls under the bridge for who seek extraction? is it not that very, very moment right now? We had a minuscule of a segue chat just before we decided to kick it off, and you were already so on the money. I wanted to recapture your turn of phrase almost straight away. First of all, welcome. Glad to have you back, by the way.
Of course. Thank you, Francis. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you again, because I always enjoy chatting with you. It's great. So it's always a challenge. I find the challenge enjoyable. So yeah.
Yes. I think broadly we concur on most things, and there's a few details that we diverge on, and we enjoy that fact, and we make our collective arguments together. Wow. Give us your quick fire summary of the most salient points people should be focusing right now. I mean, where do you want to start?
God, you know, we were before we hit record, we were talking about how I'm a little worried that they really do want to take us into World War III. Literally, as I was waiting for you to start the call, I was watching a 5-minute clip of Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić basically tell everybody, look, this is what's happening. Everything is, you know, purely window dressing at this point. They want the war. They're doing everything imaginable to get the war. And it's not going, and we're not going to avoid it at this point, because as you and I have discussed previously, and I've discussed in multiple places, they need a cover story for the sovereign debt default that's out there. And moreover, Francis, the more I think about this, and I was thinking about this significantly, literally just this morning as I was working on this month's Gold, Goats, and Guns newsletter, that this is, that there's a pattern through history here. And they really have been trying to frame Putin is Hitler or the Kaiser. And it's really no different than what they did in the run up to World War I, where they refused to negotiate, and then World War II, where they refused to negotiate. And I'm being very, very reductionist here. I know that historians will probably scream at me that it's far more complicated than that, and fair. But for the purpose of this conversation, and as a jumping off point, it's a kind of pattern. And Putin is being cast in that same role, and they have their plan in place, and their plan is going to be exactly what they did after World War I and exactly what they did after World War II. After forcing a terrible treaty on Germany in both, at the end of both
wars. Treaty of Versailles, and then
effectively Bretton Woods, and the Nuremberg trials, and then Bretton Woods, you saw a return to gold as the underlying financial asset for the new monetary system, and gold was valued at the pre-war level, creating a massive wave of deflation that exacerbated the value of the debt that was owed through reparations. They are planning on doing the exact same freaking thing to the Russians, except that it has to happen in a particular order for them, and that means you have to have the sovereign debt default that's concomitant with that's concomitant with the war, have the war, win the war, and then force a heinous reparations on the Russians, and then revalue gold to where you want it. And they want to hold the price of gold. And this is part of the reason why you can argue that they want to hold the price of gold down as opposed to up. Now, that being said, we see them this time. We didn't have the control over the media the way we did then, in either World Wars I or II. Today, it's a different story. Today, we can see them in real time.
We have a more democratized internet for awareness of detail that is not in the mainstream media this time, that didn't exist in the previous two, don't you?
Yeah,
and no, just to embellish, it's almost like they've got a ready to bake, keeping on the back burner simmer conflict with Russia, and they're waiting for the repo crisis of the CV-19 that was sort of August to rush out the distraction event that will be demand destroying initially, and then they'll create all the demand, they'll print money. We're now going to be issuing new debt for a war. You notice how they've always got money for a war. There's always debt that can be spent for war, but the infrastructure that you need, everything else can't get come. But for a new conflict to send money to Ukraine and Israel, there's always plenty of kumbaya cash. And that's going to come back into play. And then they're going to use the distraction, which probably is this escalation. So we're waiting for the equivalent of a Lehman's moment of 2008 in terms of a military conflict, a major escalation event, like an October 7th, probably as fraudulent as well.
Yeah, no, I think it is going to be something along those lines. And but before we get too far ahead of ourselves, just to finish the thought out, right? We see them now. Putin and Xi and the rest of the world understand this. They're moving via the BRICS alliance to push towards a trade settlement system based on gold, where they get to reintroduce the price of gold into the system, or have a price of gold competing in the system that wasn't there before. Like in the past, in the last two world wars, remember, the West was the industrial center of the world. They had the ability to leverage that industrial power into military power and eventually grind out their opponents. They don't have that same leverage that they had then. And the rest of the world is rejecting because they have an alternative now.
Yeah.
And that's been the most impressive part of the last 4 or 5 years, is certainly the last 2 or 3 years since Putin went first in Ukraine, because he was effectively forced to. They're trying to pull the same thing again. They're going to try and escalate to the point where he has no other option than to strike them before they strike him. And therefore, then they can blame Putin for being the aggressor and say, see, we told you he wanted to invade Poland. He wanted to invade Romania or Latvia or whatever. It's all bullshit. Like, no, you know, pardon my French, but it's all bullshit. But we can see that bullshit now so much better. And we have world leaders that are in a position, certainly the Saudi Arabians and the Iranians and others, who see this whole thing playing out, and the 50 countries that now want to become part of the BRICS, and they're setting up a parallel economic system, which we just sanctioned to stop people from using parallel economic systems, so that when gold is reintroduced into the monetary system, it's going to be a negotiated settlement, as opposed to the unilateral one we imposed after the Treaty of Versailles, when Churchill, you know, right after I was reading about this the other day, that Germany went broke and had to have their debt restructured in late 1923. The United States, along with Churchill, the United States organized a debt circle jerk system called the Dawes Plan to help recapitalize Germany. And then Churchill ignored the advice of John Maynard Keynes and went back to the pre-war gold level and literally set up a giant economic vacuum to suck all the life and wealth out of Germany, and then which resulted in the German hyperinflation of 29. And it was in 33 when Hitler defaulted on the Dawes bonds, they called them at the time. That's what actually prompted the bank shutdown in New York and the revaluation of gold and the gold confiscation moment in 1933. The United States went through a bout of hyperinflation right then, having to revalue from $20 to $35 an ounce per gold. But in the meantime, Churchill got exactly what he wanted, which was to destroy Germany. Now, fast forward to this, to Bretton Woods, 1946. What do we do after everybody, you know, inflates to high heaven, sends debt to GDP ratios far above where they are today, mind you, to fight World War II? We go back to the pre-war level of $35 an ounce in gold, with the dollar pegged to that. And then the United States goes on the Marshall Plan, all around the world, turns into a global empire, sending the military everywhere to colonize the world. And the Bretton Woods Agreement dies, and then we wind up with the dollar reserve standard to continue it out into the 21st century. And so the plan clearly in Europe is to default again, issue a digital euro at a pre-war price of gold. So if gold is $2,400 an ounce today, and during the war it spikes to effectively like $6,000 or $7,000, they're going to try and pull it back relative to the money printing to that level, and then use that to force Russia to pay post-war reparations at pre-war prices of gold. Exactly what they did to Germany.
Could be a scenario. I think the great miscalculation is that there's no winning. I mean, there is no win in this war system. I mean,
No.
the thing that shocks me is their ability to manufacture. All politicians come out for a war, all captured by the banker cartel, who got the exorbitant privilege of lending the money into existence and therefore being owed interest, which the government could have issued itself without having an usury compounded extraction mechanism that served the insiders over the masses, which of course the captured politicians play along with. So we've got a mafia system anyway. But the thing that I think in terms of all of that is that the Russians, they're probably not going, there's no win. What is define winning for the West in a war with Russia? Lots of citizens from both nations killed. Are you actually saying that does it mean a full ground invasion of Moscow and planting the American flag on top of St. Petersburg parliamentary buildings? I mean, because that ain't going to happen. Does
No.
it mean, literally riding to Vladivostok and back on an American train on the
Right.
old Trans-Siberian railways? Because it's not going to happen.
Right.
You'll have to kill every last citizen because they'll fight and resist that all the way. Does it mean, surviving a post-Holocaust, nuclear Holocaust?
Right.
What define winning? Where's there a good outcome, yet there
I
are going to
don't
be
know.
hope and enthusiasm? Where as a Westerner you see a good outcome for this?
I don't.
That you would be a supporter for this in any way,
Yeah,
and yet they
exactly. And
will
I
get
think,
this through.
no, I agree. You're absolutely right. And I think that that's what we're seeing. And certainly we're seeing it within the polling data and the demographic data coming out of the younger generations. They're like, absolutely not. We don't want this. This is one of the things that Vucic brought up in his 5-minute talk was like where's the there is no winning here. Like, and there is no upside for anybody here, except for they really do think that they can bluff their way out of this and think that because they have a slightly better hand, if they can win this hand of poker, that they flop their
But the thing is, if
they
China,
flop their top pair on the river and then and they're winning. I'm like, no, you're not, because they're not holding the hand you think they're holding.
no, and if China, I mean, they're not going to allow Russia to lose because, I mean, imagine America occupied Russia as a neighbor. I mean, imagine having that landmass under American control on a Chinese border. The Chinese, that's like having being China to Taiwan, where China gets to play being Taiwan. They're not going to have that. They will be 100% committed as well. So you actually got to beat two nations of huge landmass and a combined population of probably about 1.7 billion, with very powerful government controls that will literally conscript everyone. So if
And
you're
be
having a
willing
convention.
and a population more willing to do that because they're the ones under threat of invasion. And then we start to and then we broaden the conversation back to India. We broaden the conversation to Iran, Pakistan, and all of these are all places that no one could really conquer previously, and yet they think they're going to conquer. They're going to by conquering Russia and China that they can go back to colonizing the rest of the world. The rest of the world is over and done with this. And they understand the means by which to end this. And I think Putin understands it as well. There was that Financial Times article that came out over the weekend that revealed that Ursula von der Leyen and the Xi Jinping told Ursula von der Leyen in April of either March or April of 2023, look, we understand that the US is trying to goad us into invading Taiwan, and we're not going to take that bait. It's exactly the same argument that I've been making about Putin, that Putin can see all these cheap provocations by the British and the Americans to a lesser extent. I personally think it's all the freaking Brits and the French, to be honest with you, because they are the ones at most risk of losing everything. The United States could just end the empire, retrench, go home, and rebuild itself. Britain and France can't do that with and Germany can't do that without the United States. And they certainly can't do that if Germany says, hey, you know what? Our future is better off with Russia than with, I mean, this is old geopolitics here. We're going back to like 19th century geopolitics, but the imperatives are exactly the same because the families involved are the same, the people involved are the same, the money involved is the same. And the only difference, the wild card here is that Russia is too powerful, China is too powerful, and the United States is too powerful relative to that. But they're still trying to thread that needle where they get to cause a global collapse and chaos and ride herd through it and come out on top on the other side. And I just don't see them see it happen. And I, you know, because all that, like I said, all that really has to happen is for the United States to say, you know what? No, we're not doing that. We're not going to go into that. We're not going to do this. And I, and my read on this, and being an American, maybe I'm looking at this through rose-colored glasses, and that's a fair criticism. But what I'm seeing within the United States today is that push towards, no, you know what? No, we don't want to do this. We don't want to go this route. The political class wants to go there, but we hate the political class as much as we hate, you know, we hate, you know, as much as we hate the media. We hate these people, just like Europeans hate their governments and they hate their media. Like everybody hates these people, and yet somehow we're still moving towards war. Like, at what point do we just like shuffle them all
They
off to a
always
home?
get to do it, Tom, even when the masses are against it. I'll give you a parallel. Afghanistan and the Iraq thing. In the UK, everybody, very smart, average population, very cynical, absolutely didn't want to touch anything Tony Blair was touching. He was pushing for the war, and everyone was largely against it. I'll never forget that Evening Standard article. I was in the UK at the time, and it said, Iraq can bring to bear within 45 minutes nuclear dirty bombs on London. You know, that was a headline. And I was like, how can you print that? It's such BS. I knew it. But they started with the fear marketing, you know, that they could drop weapons. And then they started with the weapons of mass destruction. And you even had the UN, Hans Blix, I think was his name. I'm going out of memory. And he was
It's
saying,
great. Hans Blix, the UN weapons inspector.
And he was like, no, guys, we didn't really, to be frank, we didn't really do it. And then you had David Kelly, who came out, who was a state worker, and said, this dossier has been sexed up. He didn't automatically say that. He was speaking to a journalist in confidence and said, they're sexing this up because they want to go to war. And this blew up on Alistair Campbell, who was the PR spin doctor of choice under the Blair government.
I
And they
remember
did this when he was asking, when they were asking, okay, who let this be out? They had a witch hunt, and all the journalists named people, and he just shook his head. And when he didn't shake his head, they knew they'd found the guy. Next thing you knew, he'd been killed in most suspicious circumstances, where there was very little blood. He'd had his wrist slits where he couldn't have bled to death. It was minimal blood. It was clear he'd already died. And Tony Blair, you know, and his government never looked filthier with their dark state actors. And the paramedics who arrived at the scene had this dubious situation where there were already agents present at the scene that got there before them. And here was the man propped up against a tree who'd clearly been dead a while. I mean, you can't even, this is spy movie skullduggery that you say it's only the movies. It all happened. It all still happens. That's the way they operate. They were manufacturing a case for war. He got done, and his wife was paid shut up money or threatened because she never spoke again, the widower. And in fact, there was also a parliamentarian called Cook, who was in Britain, who was a Labour, and he went for a mountain walk and died of a very suspicious heart attack, who'd also campaigned for the anti-war. So I'm saying to you, it's filthy, dirty, dark state assassins. And they made that case and they rammed Britain into it. And we were all as reluctant. You know, when you're trying to take a dog for a bath and you're dragging them, and all the feet are like this. The entire of Britain's population was dragged into that godforsaken huge mistake, which rolled from Iraq into an even bigger mistake called Afghanistan, that everybody who knew the history said would be a mistake and would end in ignominy. And we know the fullness of that ignominy with the image of Biden and his plane, and you know, the paid employees being abandoned and running after the plane, don't leave us here, we're gonna have our heads cut off. You know, that's how it ended. That's how it ended, and they did it. And they're going to ram. And we saw from CV19 that most people end up complying reluctantly or hating it and being cynical, but they push it goddamn through, and the people comply. And they'll drag us into another one, even though there's zero appetite. And now there's so many little things that are occurring as well that I'm sort of, militaristically. I saw in the States that all 18 to 26 year old men are now implicitly registered. There was a slip of a piece of paper. None of these things are ever coincidences. You've had the test balloon of conscription in the United Kingdom now being flown. Keir Starmer, who is actually Labour, left wing, typically peaceniks, is talking about a conscription system. So this
Francis, is even worse than that, because what you don't hear is that behind the scenes they're trial ballooning drafting girls in the U.S. Right, and so they want to find out whether they can get that done as well. I mean, not that we have any idea what you know what constitutes a boy or a girl anymore. Maybe that's why they need to do this. Like, I don't know. Like, I kid, of course. So
Ukraine wins that race though with pregnant women being conscripted. Yes. You know, the sort of the 2-for-1. God. You know, they're really front running there.
Well, you know, never get in the way of the British wanting to kill off Slavs. Slavic.
Right?
Well, so, you know,
what you say of the British, I say is the Zionist agenda. Know, that is actually the mercurial disease across all our governments. But I agree and concur entirely.
And I won't disagree with you about that either. I just like to broaden it a little bit more than just the Zionists. That's it. I actually think that it's an even broader conspiracy, or not conspiracy, but fundamental hatred than just those people. I think it's bigger than that, honestly. Yeah. And that's why I choose to use very specific language, not because I'm afraid of the word Zionism, but because it's about trying to get people to understand that this is beyond any particular one ideology or religion or anything else. This is just good old-fashioned colonialism and greed. That's what this is about at the end of the day. And it's about the loss of power and the loss of potency. Yes, there are conflating and conflicting little, you know, various groups, but they're all in on it at a certain level. And it's not for any other reason that I try to stay away from, but just I try to remind everybody that look, yeah, there's a huge Zionist, you know, Zionism was created by the British. Like we understand this. It's a political hijacking of Jewish eschatology. I mean, I've spoken about this in public. I don't have any problem with that. So, but it's also deep. It's also bigger than that. And I think most of these people are ultimately a-religious. They're all nihilists. I think nihilism doesn't, you know, I think, you know, nihilism just doesn't cross. It will cross as ethnicity. That's it. I mean, it's just it. You know, people who live in their
appetites. They certainly have appetites for Christian heritage, a population destruction. This I have to say isn't a long way away from the Deagle stats projection for 2025, and I can't help thinking that particular dot sort of floats not too far in the future, you know, following from the setup of events. And you join that fellow, you end up you know, by the time you're recruiting women as well, as you mentioned, and men, you end up with a demographic that has been hollowed out of the sexually active ages from, you know, 18 to probably, you know, 18 to 26 very quickly becomes 18 to 36.
Yes.
And even and 46.
Yes.
Exactly. Listen, things are getting intense. We're about to win, though. We are about to win, but we need that extra manpower to finish turning the screw, you understand, as a result.
It's so pathetic to watch them play this game over and over again. And you know, the thing is, this time is different, I believe. And I believe it's different for a couple of different reasons. And I've gone over this with you in the past. And the more I think about it, the more I think I'm correct about this. I'm seeing things within the American power system, the American power structure. There's a countervailing forces that are literally going, you know what? We're just going to put the brakes on this and say, if you want this war this time, you're going to do so at 5.5% or 6%. You're not going to do it at the zero bound. You're not going to issue, you know, who's going to buy hundreds of billions of dollars or trillions of dollars worth of war bonds like we did in equivalent during World War II. And I really do see the Federal Reserve at this point. And it pains me to even say this, but when I look at the sunsetting of LIBOR, which is a big deal, It's LIBOR stops being quoted on September 30th. And notice how everybody's talking about there's going to be a war in the next 3 to 4 months. It's because someone's running a 30 basis point VIG on LIBOR over SOFR. SOFR is literally draining the offshore dollar markets. And now we have a policy divergence between the ECB and the Fed that is significant. And this week, we get to find out what the Bank of England's going to do. But everybody other than the Fed and their wingman at the Bank of Japan are cutting rates while the Fed is holding and the Bank of Japan is slowly starting to raise rates. Maybe a couple of years too late, we could argue the very specifics on Japan. But the general trend is very, very clear. And while at the same time, the Chinese, I think, are inviting a bid under the price of gold to call as also another countervailing force, because the higher gold pushes in this pre-war environment, you know, the more it's putting pressure on currency markets and debt and global debt markets around the world. This is a big issue ultimately. So hard capital is moving east. Soft capital is desperately trying to hold the cost of their crap capital down. They can't do so because the price of gold is rising, blah 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 blah, and they're trying to hold the price of oil down as well in order to keep inflation under control, to keep investors from leaving sovereign bonds. They're trying to play this shell game at every level, and you see it play out in the markets every morning. I used to follow the gold market 20 years ago when I had some hair left, and it was always gold would be up in the morning, overnight in Asia, and then up during Europe. And then minute 8:30 started, Mr. Slammy would start coming in and pushing on the price of gold throughout the entire New York market. The New York market would close. The markets would close for about half an hour. Sydney would open. Gold would probably start to rise again. And lather, rinse, repeat on most market days. Today, we're seeing the exact opposite. We're seeing gold do whatever it's going to do during the Asian market, get slammed along with interest rates getting pushed down, sovereign bond yields getting pushed down up until New York opens. When New York opens, gold starts to rise, bonds start to get sold. So who's running the yield curve control thing here? It's Europe is running yield curve control because they're the sick man at the table. They're the one that doesn't want gold to rise. They don't want people leaving their stock markets, their bond markets, or anything else. They're the ones talking about capital controls every day.
Here's the big thing on what you were just saying. They're the ones that did cuts and need to keep gold down, because if you have a debt-based crisis, America will get the macro inflows for bonds because they're paying a higher rate and they've taken a bigger loss already. While the euros that are the European markets, if they're cutting, they're actually needing a bid under bonds on the basis that they're gained in value. That's what so few people don't talk about, is the other side. They talk about currencies and they never talk about the debt markets. Right. And the debt market's got to get bid up. You've got to want to buy European debt if you're going to cut. The BOE's decision is who's going to be putting the bid. You've got to remember they threw Kwasi Kwarteng and Truss under the bus for doing a stimulus budget in a difficult downturn. On the basis of, well, it was going to be more debt. They had a pension crisis. The guys weren't getting enough yield. They tried to sell bonds. There was no bid. They didn't want to crash the market. They said, hey, we got a problem here. And just to make sure that it's not only seen as a UK issue, you had the exact same with the teachers' pensions, the Californian teachers' pensions. So to me, the big unspoken about story is what Ray Dalio for the first time mentioned. He's concerned about an absence of bid under debt markets.
Yes.
And he was talking about the US markets, but it's a global issue. There is too much of it. It is too overvalued. And the 40-year bull cycle takes that long on the escalator, but the elevator is a lot shorter. And we're in the fourth year of what must be a six-year collapse. Seven, eight, okay, maybe five. That's where I see it.
I agree with you completely, and this is why I've been screaming about watching Lagarde run a yield, and Yellen with her as her wingman run a yield curve control operation on the German Bund and the versus the U.S. Treasury market. I've been following the 2-year German Bund U.S. Treasury spread and the 10-year at the same time. I've been charting it for 3 years. Like on a daily basis,
What do you compute from it?
And what is very clear. And then when you look at the TIC data, what you see, which is the what central banks have been buying US Treasuries. What you find is the following. You find that Europe, and especially the Bank of England and satellites of the Bank of England, have been buying an unbelievable amount of US debt. Now,
They've
England
had
is in the
China's
and the whole
pipeline, Japan and Britain, and then Belgium, the special proxy
Now,
island.
Belgium, the
Don't you do my
Caymans,
debt?
British Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, Bermuda, Liechtenstein or Luxembourg, all of those, right? So the whole Eurozone, and I include Canada in that as well, for lack of a better term. I may be wrong about that, but it's like net in almost $900 billion, and it's over since September of 2021. And the net selling out of Asia Pacific, which would be mostly China and Singapore and others, it's not even close to that. It's only a few hundred billion. And so anything that China sold, the Europeans have bought in order to keep the euro up and German bond yields down by manipulating the 2-10 spread within the American yield curve. And Yellen, and this is why Yellen has been selling 2 years and not 10 years. That's why she's sold mostly 2 years over the last couple of years, because she really did think that she could outlast Powell, hope that the United States economy would roll over faster, and then force Powell to cut rates, and that she would be able to roll over that 2-year debt that she issued at lower interest rates, and it hasn't worked. And so her bluff has been called, Lagarde's bluff has been called, and finally, when Lagarde had to come out and say, "I'm cutting rates because inflation is tamed," because Biden drained the SPR and dropped the price of oil and gasoline. That's all he's done. It's a temporary thing. When you see all of that in together, you're like, "Oh, this is just a temporary pause in inflation." Powell's over there literally accusing the Biden administration of cooking the books, which is an unprecedented event in the history of American monetary policy. Okay? And in an election year, on top of everything else, and you see all of that, and you're like, "Oh, in 3 months, the price of oil is going to be," and they want to start a war where they're going to keep the price of oil below $85 a barrel. Yeah, how about you pull my other leg, because it plays Jingle Bells. It's retarded, Francis, what I'm seeing. And I'm like, no, what's going to happen is oil's going to go back to $100 a barrel. Copper's going to break back above five. Silver's going to break to 50. All the industrial metals are going to start rising again. Inflation's going to return. The ECB is going to get decimated. And you're going to see the spread between German and US bonds collapse. And it's currently, and every time it starts to, that spread starts to collapse, where German debt starts to rise faster than American debt, Lagarde, and there's always some miraculous 25 basis point move down in the US Treasury markets. Always.
I loved that synopsis you've just given. And by the way, I wanted to interject, but I didn't want to interrupt your flow. The amazing thing about that is you've had Russia and OPEC deliver cuts to keep the oil price high, which has kept the inflation genie burning, which is their version of financial warfare on the combination of Europe and America, but particularly the energy resource light European axis. So, and Saudi has actually worked with Russia on that, which is a precursor to early BRICS involvement and cooperation, which makes it doubly interesting given their intentions to obviously potentially come on board. And of course, the fact that it makes them more money. And it's nice to cooperate when in CV19 they worked against each other and caused the glut and actually crashed both their collective markets to the benefit of a very low inflation rate, which of course oil, when running that low, invariably did. The interesting thing just brought the chart up, Tom, that I find kind of interesting and for all our viewers. I mean, they love the geopolitics, they love the viewing, but a potential trade or a technical observation here is that there is a real tightening. I'm hoping the overlay transgender pink lines are popping up, but you're actually
Yes, they are.
reversing off of a low. And we are setting up, we've got three nice impulses. So I could simplify it diagrammatically, like something like that. We're winding up for some form of a move that I'm guessing is up. I could be wrong. We could have a huge bank collapse, go deflationary, and first have a downside sell-off. But there's a major impulsive move. We're not going to continue to tighten forever in this ever-tightening range. A breakout is coming. It's not tomorrow, it's not next week, and it's not even next month. I still think there's a time for an up and over like this. But round about October, which is also, don't forget, the most divisive election is about to come, where somebody's going to be as mad as hell and spitting feathers at the outcome. Never mind that, questioning the outcome and voting integrity or counting integrity is now a political football that both sides will use freely. You're going to have some very impulsive move, one way or the other. The longer term, I think, is up, even if you did go down, but you could just go straight to up out of this. And that could also be conjoined with a timing for the military escalation. Because whilst I say we are already at war, and there's already a British MP that says that, and that Rishi Sunak doesn't want to be a wartime leader, and in fact, the Tories will lose. They've done a good job of making sure they will lose.
They're going to
And
get
Labour
wiped
will
out completely.
likely be, he's unlikely to be, although the war's technically in a low tempo way already begun, it's on the back burner. The escalation that everybody will accept as the beginning of the war is probably going to come, and that could be the driver on the oil prices as well.
I
And when you
agree.
have Saudi and Russia being a lot of the tipping balance, so America is kind of oil independent, providing they're fracking, but Europe isn't. Who they're going to buy from? And they've probably been getting a lot of gas and energies from Russia just via third parties with bungs. If they go into a conflict and the Soviets put a cork in any form of supply of making it way through to the Europeans, there's going to be real energy fireworks.
Yeah, no, I agreed. It's the thing sitting in everybody's back pocket is like at the end of the day, I think the numbers just came out the other day that that Russia is now supplying Europe with more natural gas than the US for the first time in 2 years since the war started. So that plan has clearly failed because at the end of the so you have that
Isn't the pipeline
undergirding
growing
everything you just
up?
basically undergirding everything you just said. Right. The firmly agreeing with you on everything you just said, Francis. What I would say on top of that is they have the OPEC, or in this case, BROPEC, because now you have Brazil, has the hammer. And interestingly enough, when they said at the last meeting that they weren't going to change their production schedule, that was a signal to the market that, oh, by the way, it's two things. One, we're going to go for market share as a block. That's one. And two, I was speaking to a young oil analyst on my podcast a couple of weeks ago by the name of Ben Kellerman, and he brought up the fact that the U.S. has been changing the definition of barrel of oil equivalent to include more and more natural gas liquids and even natural gas itself into the production statistics, so that when we see that 13.1 million barrels per day that the U.S. is producing, there's not as much crude in that mix because the wells that are coming out of the Permian and various and Niobrara and all the rest in the Bakken is the new wells that are being drilled have less oil in them and more natural gas and natural gas liquids in them. And because of that, that number is actually not, I wouldn't call it ephemera, but it's less tangible as far as crude oil markets are concerned than before, than it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago. So you can't compare like any more than you can compare the Brent price today than you could 3 years ago, because it's now 25% weighted in WTI. Also, no, the Brent contract has been changed. That's now 25% carries 25% WTI weighting in it. Moreover, if that's the case, and West Texas Intermediate is now being represented by more natural gas liquids, is even less. There's even it's even more manipulated. And so now these numbers just look like Bureau of Labor Statistics jobs report numbers, which are all just bullshit, right? They're just making it up as they go along,
The
and some of them moving
standard
it.
trick
Yes,
is
exactly.
change the definitions and remove all basis of exact to exact comparison. This is
Exactly.
the shrinkflation. This is all the trickery of retailer shrinkflation, or less coffee in the basket of goods, etc., etc. And then you get someone like Shadow Stats, who does Ronald Reagan era exactly on the same level, and you get a true number.
Well,
And that's where the great lie.
what I like to say generally is that, oh, what a shock. Commies like to change the definitions of words.
Yes, like a recession as well. Don't forget, we have already had that communistic adjustment. Two negative quarters. Oh, no. Employment was too strong for it to count as a recession.
So the recession, the definition of recession is now fungible. Like, are you kidding me? Like, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Very Bolshevik indeed. So what else do you see? Surely, if we're talking debt collapse, this is going to be a potential run on banks because they are the intermediators of fiat, and the debt instruments are inextricably interwoven in the system. Surely, we see the beginning of a banking run or a repo market
Yeah.
churn
Well, what I've
before we then get the militaristic side that becomes the distraction narrative. Or could it be Russian hack and we get a zeroizing of balance? That goes straight to solving a lot of problems. Because then it's a case of, hey, shucks, we lost all your money, but it wasn't us that did it. It's these guys we really need you to die fighting against that did it. So now you get angry and we'll give you a gun and you go give him some hurt. How do you
Well,
see?
this is, yeah, how I see a lot of this is, I'll FYI, I noticed last week with the potential for the for Marine Le Pen in France to win and win big, and Macron's party to literally get shut out of government in the same way that Nigel Farage may shut the Tories out
Yes, reform. Yeah.
of Parliament, right?
And
That they're
Merz
going to
to
get
the right, the extreme right wingers.
Wait.
That's a gimme, isn't
Yeah,
it?
that's a gimme. And then they'll blame it on them, which is they've already pre-sold that narrative to blame the victims, right? What I've noticed already is that there's a divergence between XLF, the US financials ETF, and EUFN, the European financials ETF. Last week, there was a big move in the DAX, the Euro Stoxx 50, EUFN, and other stock markets, as when we saw the euro breaking down and there was a rotation trade out of stocks and a risk-off trade out of stocks and into bonds, which is what we saw on Friday or Thursday and Friday of last week. That was just a pure panic move in my mind. The euro dropped below $1.07. They were able to get it up above 107 into the close and hold it there. But the stock markets all got killed in Europe. The Dow was flat. The Nasdaq was up. The Nikkei was up slightly. And so you're beginning to see the rumbles of a first they'll rotate out of stocks into bonds, and then they'll rotate out of German bunds and into U.S. treasuries, and then or something else. And then from there they'll go to other places. It's going to be we're going to watch capital slosh from one safe perceived safe haven to another over the course of the next 2 or 3 months in the run up to this Lehman event in the financial markets, and then USS Liberty event or Pearl Harbor event that we expect to see in the on in the geopolitical military side of it. I think it's all shaping up for that kind of September,
Just me
October timeframe.
speculating. Just me speculating and spitballing. Don't you think, given that there are no Chinese walls, you might have even had the likes of Lagarde whisper the fact that she intends to cut because she needed the rotation out of equities. She needed the liquidity to come in as flows, as bid under the bond market. And you actually, people always think the central banker sets the rate. But when you're really deep in shit, and there's nobody, and your assets are garbage, and nobody really wants it. You actually need the market to work with you to continue to maintain the impression that you are the person setting the rate. And maybe with a little bit of an insider, guys, we're going to be giving a little cut, blah 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 blah, bump to the side. Everybody gets primed. Okay, we'll come with you for the bond market this time. For a while, but that money might not stay there as a bid for that long. But it came and it brought her cut that she pre-sold, possibly behind closed doors, because they need that. There's very little appetite for debt everywhere. And I take us back to the Dalio comments, what he said about the US applies broadly. I mean, essentially, you had a pension fund that couldn't dispose of their pensions at the mark-to-market price and would have had to chase the stack down, which would have upset the Bank of England and everybody. So ended up saying, hey guys, we're not getting anyone buying our stuff here, and we've got to pay old people their monthlies. So it's,
No,
I think,
you're not. I don't even think you're spitballing on that one. She pre-sold that rate cut for 2 weeks before it actually happened. Now, the question is, was she pre-selling that earlier than it became public? But she announced to the world that
oh,
she was
almost
cutting rates.
certainly.
Yeah, almost
Yeah,
certainly. And the
almost
same thing
certainly.
goes with how Yellen publishes what she expects to sell into the markets and everything else. But I find it really funny in the midst of all of this, the US runs two of the best 10 and 30 year treasury auctions of all time in recent weeks. Like the bid to covers on those, I mean, Zero Hedge does a great job of covering these things. And I'm like, oh, look, what a shock. There was a massive run at a buy on US 10 years and 30 years, and it was central bank buying. And I'll bet you dollars to dog shit, Francis, it was the Bank of England. It was possible. It was the Bundesbank.
Japan.
By proxy, it
Yeah.
might have even been the Swiss National Bank. So now here's another, now that I bring that up, here's another interesting thing. The reason that Lagarde had to pre-sell publicly the rate cut was because if you watch the Swiss franc market, the Swiss franc, which after the Swiss National Bank cut rates surprisingly back in March, and we saw the Swiss franc weaken hard versus both the dollar and the euro, right? For about 8 weeks, it rolled over right about the same time that Lagarde started talking rate cut. There it is. There's your Swiss franc. Either it looks very similar to between the dollar versus the Swiss franc and the euro. So if you posit, and this is a fairly strongly understood posit, that the Swiss National Bank is a wholly owned subsidiary of the Bundesbank, then you understand that the Swiss cut rates to save the Bundesbank. There was a whole series of articles that came out that said, you know, German banks are really exposed to U.S. commercial real estate, which is softening badly, and the Bundesbank may actually be insolvent. And then, lo and behold, about 3 days later, the Swiss National Bank, gets everybody up with a surprise rate cut. The deuce you say, like, you know what I mean? Like, so you're there, it's staring you in the face. And then when the Swiss franc finally starts to roll over, because if they've run out of juice, now Lagarde has to cut rates in order to save the German bond market.
I think the only thing I'd change in that is that the square flag nation owns the Bundesbank rather than the other way around. The Swiss National Bank, that would be my guess. With
Okay.
all the Five Eyes states living out in the mountain there. I would say SNB and BIS almost theoretically two different brands, but they run the whole bunch out there. And like you said, it was a shock to me when the SNB cut because they've had a runaway housing market. They need higher rates, but because they're landlocked to a failing euro state, they've just taken it on the currency. This is a non-stop. I mean, we are a macro long franc short euro caller. And then I saw this escalation and the surprise cut by the Swiss National Bank. It's probably because they knew they had to preempt the strength they would be getting when Euroland cut, and that was coming. And it's almost like they needed to shock the market with a bit of Swiss franc weakness because they've given back almost 50% in three candles there. That took about 30 candles to get back up. So it's a
Exactly. No, that's a
fascinating
very good
comment
point,
there.
Francis.
Yeah,
That's
we
a
love. I
great
mean,
point. Thank you.
the Euro Swiss franc is a is. I mean, we've got two mega short calls historically on this guy, both with the peg fail and even earlier the precession to the Greek crisis, which was over here. And
Yes.
I can tell you, on the lower time frames in there, they were desperately trying to hold the 150, and there was perpetual intervention, which became obvious again here and here, which was obviously there was the peg, but people didn't realize that they were actually fighting like gangbusters there. There, each line I've driven, and I've done right down to like 15-minute charts on each of those areas I've done you as they were at the time. And every time they jawed, we were going to intervene one of these moments, and you got this rally, was a moment after they had already been furiously intervening and it was getting real expensive. So they decided, you know, we'll jawbone it, but they were already actively in it. So this was a huge collapse. And it's just down, you know, it's nonstop down. Because of, you know, the Euros. I got involved in one of these Twitter arguments with someone who's a sort of an entrepreneur, small business guy. And he's kind of was going on about, you know, the UK, because he's based in the UK, and what a mistake it was to leave the euro and all of this. And I said, what? The transfers that Britain was paying and the fact that Tony Blair had given back Margaret Thatcher's rebate, they literally paying close to what Germany were paying. They were getting reduced access. They were always considered like the third guy in a couple's night out. Between France and Germany. And, you know, he said, yeah, but I know a guy who had a business and he was getting Euro contract and all of that. And I was going, You net off all the flows. That was one heck of an expensive club to be part of for Britain. But he's
That's
sort of
right.
their current malaise. It's Brexit. The people made a mistake. They voted it. And that wasn't Brexit. It was getting into it in the first place. And the
Right.
interesting thing about the European collapse clauses is they're on the hook for 10 years. I did a YouTube when this happened because the Brexit vote was 2016 and we predicted it. It was the first of the Trump will get in office predictions
Yes.
that was deemed extreme right because Brexit was very much there was immigration played a big role as it still does today with this mysterious facet that Western nations are being flooded with low education military age males, but let's not go down that one just yet. So that Brexit call and then it led to the Trump call, all of which actually materialized. But the fascinating aspect about that is Britain should never have entered. They should never have entered. They should have stayed friendly. They should have had a trade agreement. They were still the net tourists to Europe rather than Europe to London. And they would be far, far better off than having entered. But they are on the. Oh, sorry. The point I was going to make is when Brexit occurred, it was 2016. They're on the hook. I said, reset date is set by 2026. It's got to have happened because the election was 2016. There was lots of pushing backwards and forwards, and I think they were on the hook for around 10 years from the vote for debts in the event of a euro collapse. People don't know the clauses of their divorce. So it's kind of like you've divorced your wife. But you've still got to pay you, and you, and she took 50% of everything. But they're saying if she goes bust and blows all her cash, picks up a cocaine habit and a casino habit, and loses all her money, you're going to have to step in and pay her alimony as well on top of that and cover her losses at the casino and with her drug dealers for any period until 10 years, providing she's got through that 10 years, then she's on her own. And that's the divorce agreement between Britain and Euro. And I said, they've got to be pulled in to into this collapse. They're going to have to be weakened because this is a leveling. It's a great leveling. What we're actually waiting for is that, Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations, the book, The Great Economic Wealth. This is the destruction of wealth of nations. And we need all the lepers in the leper colony to be properly bedbound and on the deathbed. And so Britain is probably going to be roped in by the nature that they whilst they've technically left the party, they're still on liability until 2026. And I made reset has to have happened by that time because my expectation is that they need to be leveled in the process of that collapse as well. So I don't know what you think about that.
Oh
Would
no, I
you?
think I oh Francis, I didn't I for I, if I knew about the 10-year agreement like that, I'd forgotten about it. So thank you for reminding me because it tracks perfectly with everything that we've seen in British politics since then. The inordinate amount of interference in undermining Brexit, why they made the Irish border such a big deal, and why they got rid of Liz Truss and Queen Elizabeth, and I think BlackRock was there blackmailing the Bank of England with a zero bid under the pension markets. I think this was all designed in order to that I've looked at the I've called this the coup against the Lizzes, that moment. And interestingly enough, I did a thing the other day about 2 weeks ago for my patrons where I was like, I get pushback from basically the hard Zionist crowd within my community that I don't give that I'm like that they I don't give enough credit to them. I'm like, look, the Brits are being sold out here as well. Go look. And I went ahead and I said, look, all roads freaking lead to London. And I started doing an analysis of the turns in the UK 10-year versus German 10-year and looked at that spread. And I tied it to major geopolitical events. And then I did it for the United States versus UK 10-year. And you could see, and it's all like laid out that it started that the dislocation in the UK gilt market started and has turned exactly in Europe's favor at every major geopolitical event until we get to today, where we have basically yield curve control amongst all the markets. And somebody else, somebody was said this the other day, I think it was Hartnett. Mountain said, you know, the currency markets are about as boring as watching paint dry. It screams that there's this massive amount of control going on in the currency markets, and that the whole world's blowing up. How is this possible? It's because there are major forces desperately trying to hold everything in a very tight range, and the whole thing is going to explode. It's not just oil. It's not just the German Bund. The last time we were on, I had you put up the German 10-year and just showed how Lagarde had drawn a line in the sand at 2.5%. And then that line got pushed back to 2.6. And then now it's 2.35 because of last week, because they moved to 20 basis points or 25 basis points. But the interesting part about it is they had to move the U.S. Treasury market 50 basis points to get 25 basis points out of the German Bund, when in times past it was almost a 1-for-1. And yeah. So the cracks are showing, my friend. The cracks are showing.
Indeed. And it's fascinating what you mentioned on currency markets and the lack of trading opportunity in terms of trend. You may record we had the Rickards period of currency wars. It's almost like currency peace has broken out. In essence, everybody is working together without allowing any one nation to get an export advantage, apart from the Japanese, which are the whipping boys at the moment because they're holding their debt up at a ridiculous level. So you take the Japanese kid who keeps getting a thrashing just for looking skiff at the teacher out of the equation. Everybody else is being left alone, and the war is over, and everybody's working together, and nobody's allowed to get too much cheese, but no one's allowed to get no cheese either. And there's this perfect currency peace after the currency war periods, where it's an orchestrated, range-bound situation that points to the master handlers manufacturing exactly. That thing. By the way, going back also to the UK and the European part, the Europe needed the money and is the soft, idiotic child, kept getting the benefit. It was almost like it was the special kid, the autistic kid, and Britain was, you know, the normal one. And the normal kid kept having to take a hit because, you know, they were always pushing, giving the football to the autistic one because, he'd swing his foot and miss the ball. And they're saying, oh, have another go. And the British kid was being kept away from the ball. Because in every negotiation, they just rolled over, whether it was Tony Blair, Theresa Hewitt, they went in there, and the Europeans were always celebrating major victories, getting huge slices of commitments, and the British would come away with next to nothing in all of these negotiations. I mean, it eventually came that Theresa May, I called her Hewitt, Theresa May was going over there, and literally she was being laughed at, and people were giggling at her, and she was coming back getting thrashings. And batterings because it was required. It was like the divorce where Europe got to be the jilted wife and Britain was the philandering, toxic male. You know, they made them pay, they made them pay, they made them pay. They still don't have access to their own fishing lands in their own territorial waters. They've had the family silver ripped out of their mouth. They've got a liability clause for the decade further. I mean, everything about it was a divorce that would turn them billionaires to barely millionaires, you know.
It was awful. It was absolutely awful. I agree with you completely. But what else is new? This is we go back to the beginning of this conversation with how, you know, Churchill, did this to Germany after World War One, and then they did it again after World War Two, and it's very clear to me. This is why I keep looking at this. Going at the end of the day, the European Union is the cancer at the heart of the world's political and economic, the heart of the they're the heart of the problem. But they're the cancer that's eating away at everything because they refuse to go away. These are the old colonial powers of Europe, of which Britain is certainly one of them. But like there, I think I described it the other day was it's basically two drunken narcissists fighting against themselves over who gets to control what's left of the ant pile. And the rest of the world just wants to move on away from these people and let them fight amongst themselves. And they keep saying, well, we have control of this banking part of the banking system and this institution and that, and you have to follow us down our path of, and you'll notice that the EU has turned very, very aggressive in terms of its regulation and trying to export its regulatory framework to all of its trading partners. Similarly to how I've been saying this for years, no different than how California uses that model to export all of their bad ideas to the other 49 states, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same model writ large again. And the same, so that's what they have left. They have this regulatory thing. Well, if you want to trade with us, you have to, you know, embrace European values, and you have to do this, and you have, that means you have to do all the things that we tell you to do. And everybody's like, you know what? No. How about no? And we'll move on. And the problem then is, how do you extricate yourself from this ridiculous abusive relationship? And there's only one way out. Ultimately, you can get political control of your country, but they'll never allow that to happen as long as there's a money printing machine that can buy elections. So this is why I kept coming back to the whole argument here is that SOFR for the United States is that last declaration of independence, because now the United States has a debt indexing rate that's independent and based on American domestic banking health, not whether or not Deutsche Bank's derivative book is a mess, or Northern Rock's, you know, the derivative book or real estate holdings are shit, or Standard Chartered or HSBC or any of the rest of them. That includes, you know, ING. It includes all of these.
Just at the point that most banks are pretty much in an equal degree of absolute wreck. So it's a pity you didn't get it earlier, because unfortunately, I would say there's very, you may feel the American banking system is in a better shape. I would say it's a very small margins. It's a game of very small margins now. It's a dependence that by the time you won it, its consequences greatly reduced, unfortunately. I can see it, feel that.
But here's the thing. Just one point on that. I don't disagree with you, Francis. I think that we're going to wind up having to go through a very, very terrible period. But at the same time, if we as a country commit to some form of fiscal responsibility, which we're far past, and we do this, we can ride out this on the other side. We are. There's a lot more going on here in the United States than people want to give us credit for. And I think that it's part of the gaslighting that's been going on. And we need the United States as a global community to survive in its some form of constitutional republic. Otherwise, we are in serious trouble worldwide, because the target here is the US bond market, right? The target is, how do you destroy the US bond market and not destroy the European bond market? How do you do that? If you can break the United States up into multiple countries, that's how you do it. And so I think that's why they're pushing this secessionist thing hard and all of the rest of it. And again, it's my inherent Americanness. I believe that there are fundamental ideas, foundational ideas to the United States, which honestly, old Europe is still angry about. The idea that the government is subordinate to the people and all the rest of it. And the same thing goes for the rest of the world. And so that idea cannot win ideologically, that the people are sovereign and the government is subordinate to them. Ideologically, that is, I think, the thing that needs to be killed. That's the baby they want truly destroyed. And if you watch what's happening legally in the United States, it's very clear that they're targeting that in every way. That's what the Trump prosecution is all about and all the rest of it. That's just one aspect of it, but it's very, very deep. And everywhere. And I don't know if we can survive it.
I would argue, Tom, you were born in Freemasonry, my friend. The only three signatures weren't absolutely proven Freemasons. And I'm afraid the virus was in the baby at birth, like an inoculation, because it was those same European forces you regale against that were part of the foundational document and registered the initial corporation. So you never had the fullness of freedom. You were sold a Lexington advert and a Paul Revere cigarette advert. You had a big, open, beautiful country, and it was very easy to believe that you were free, but you were born in Freemasonry, and it's everywhere. And that is the, you know, the Kabbalah light. But I want to move on to something else. What you said was super interesting about the European trying to export their regulatory system. Mm-hmm. And part and parcel of that is, as probably the lead autistic idiot to fall down the debt hole, as we both made reference to, one of the things they absolutely intend doing that they don't yet have that America has is the global taxation that America has. And Europeans are all over the world, people that have British passports or German passports, etc. And I'm getting that the one of the super trends, and Europe wants to be at the forefront of this, is as debt fails, rather than recognizing the failure of their policies and that they're lurching to complete Bolshevik communism in the end, because you take Britain, the state is 45% of the economy, and that's not counting all the private businesses would fail that rely on state largesse for contracts, etc. So we're already all socialist and leaning on Marxist. The state has become too big a part of the economy. But given that as a statement, they are going to double down on tax extraction on those that have wealth to create the politics of envy, even if you removed 100% of all the billionaires in Britain, you wouldn't meet a small fraction of debt repayment on that which is owned. But the politics of envy and the pursuit of ultimate tax extraction across the global sphere, that is part of what Europe is driving. And their biggest stumbling blocks is actually America, that has protected itself as being the largest offshore haven. Don't forget Delaware, all the guys. And America won't be bullied by Europe on that point. And Europe is actually butting heads against that. But I see all forms of the common reporting standards, all of this that's being driven actually through Europe. And we're going to end up with some form. They also have all these discussion documents on tax harmonization. Globally, and everybody must pay a minimum of at least this. And they are trying to drive a new mechanism that will bring back people into their net or ensure that there are no other attractive exits for the global money that can move for escaping their extraction, which tells me they're going to double down on taxing the rich, which will be the politics of the envy to pay for the collapsing debt markets, the collapsing social welfare that they won't be able to make anymore, and so many other aspects. Where do you
And
see tax extraction globally moving in terms of nation states' plans? It only seems to
I,
get worse and
dude, I
harder.
agree. I agree with everything you just said, and it's clear that that's, I called them communists earlier. There's a reason for that. You have to ultimately destroy the middle class and the bourgeoisie, and you do that through tax extraction. They've been doing it for 100 years. They gave us the progressive income tax. They gave us Social Security, which is a, which is a wealth destroying process, because you don't have the money now in order to build it. Like, no, it's you're absolutely correct. Confiscatory tax rates are clear, and you tax the wealthy now, after you create a wealth disparity that is unlike anything seen in human history, and people will be screaming for communism or something, collectivism and redistribution of wealth. They'll be screaming for it. That's what they're hoping for, and then they'll be the ones at the top with their new digital currency after they default on all the debt, stip all the bondholders, and that's that eye of the needle that I was talking about earlier, that they want to drive massive global chaos, kill off all the dissidents, intimidate all the near dissidents by and then leave the world in a state of perpetual feudalism. And lather, rinse, repeat, and do the same damn thing they've done in every other friggin' cycle of history
Which is the
previously.
World Economic Forum. You will own nothing and be happy. They are.
Of
It's, it
course,
was,
of
it
course.
wasn't just a concept document. It was actual planning.
I mean,
And I
and
do.
this goes into like the OECD rules about taxation and all this stuff. It's all there, and you listen to them talk, and you can always tell which of the American leaders in our politics subscribe to this theory, they subscribe to these things, or work for these people or not. And it's always the ones that, like Janet Yellen, is clearly a freaking globalist. She's always talking about raising the corporate tax rate, always talking about, and she's billed as a labor economist. This woman that has done more to destroy labor in the United States than any person in history, other than maybe the Baker Act, for Christ's sake. Like, it's insane. But this is nothing new. It's been going on forever and a day, and it'll continue to go on until it doesn't. And the question then is, I don't see a way out that doesn't involve the capital. See, this is the thing. They always decided as locusts. These people are locusts. They're not demons. They're not vampires. They're locusts. They destroy an area. They come in, they wipe it out, and then they move to the next area. And they harvest all the capital and then move to the next area. And they fully expected to strip mine the United States, strip mine after they strip mine Europe, then they're going to strip mine. They planned on strip mining China and they planned on strip mining Russia. Putin said no to that, put Khodorkovsky in jail, nationalize Yukos or whatever he did. And then Xi said basically the same thing, refuses to open his capital account, refuses, and then has, and then as the Chinese property bubble has burst, they put all the American, they put all the European investors at the back of the line, in terms of like Evergrande and all, and Evergrande, Archegos Capital, all of those things are all examples of how Xi is going to handle any kind of debt default in China from here forward. It's going to be for China first, and then everybody else gets to the back of the line, which is of course the way it should be. And you know, these people thought that they were going to be able to go in, build China, and then get control of it politically. Through the quote unquote oligarch cycle, and it didn't work there. And part of me honestly believes it worked in the United States brilliantly, right? Worked in the United States unbelievably well. Now the question is, has the United States decided we can break this cycle too? Because the Russians and the Chinese are not going to knuckle under. So then the question is, are we going to be dragged reluctantly into war by these people? Now, the only thing I have to say, Francis, is unfortunately I have another meeting in about 10 minutes, so we have to wrap up soon. I hate to do this to you because I love chatting with you, but I bracketed an hour and a half for this, unfortunately. So,
yeah, no, that's great. My difference is they're all in the game, even Putin and Xi. Its difference is they are going to be building nations and the West is in decline. So it's sure. The flow. And that's the flow from the West to the East. They're also controlled. They've also sold communism, the Chinese. Putin still has a large, but they get to play the good guy role that's actually doing positive developmental things that are family, pro-family values. And actually, they get us in the West actually wishing we were now citizens of Russia instead of under Biden. I'll finish on this, Tom, because we've had a great session and the time has flown. But property markets are a great source for taxing people out of their assets, and they can't move. And I think property taxes are going to come in hard. And I'll leave you with, and the viewers as well, just to give them another idea. We gave a take on the oil. Rightmove is a UK internet. It's a bit like a Zoopla in the States. Did very, very well bringing online estate agencying in, ridden the boom and, you know, the website searching and giving previous purchase prices. And we've got this big trumpet going on up in there, a broadening. And if there isn't a more foreboding site for the, say, let's say the British property market, but I would say property in general, I'm a bit bearish the British economy. They're sure. getting a Labour government at the point that they actually have had terrible finances. So the Tories, rather than handing the till with some cash in it, are handing an empty till. Labour's going to spend. So I don't know how they threw Kwasi Kwarteng and Truss under the bus, but they're going to accept a Labour government who are going to want to spend. But they'll probably spend in the right way, in wars for military. So that'll be allowed by the bankers. But this points to a collapse in UK property. We've got a head and shoulders in pink there, a massive broadening, increasing volatility structure. What's your take for real estate as a whole in the world and maybe UK in particular before we sign off?
Well, what I'd say is this. The whole currency regime has been this, if you've noticed, has been to send the British pound higher, which is terrible for Britain. The pound is way overvalued at this point. And so if there has to be a if there's a break in this regime, then what you're going to see is a weakening of the pound that may help the British property market. We'll see. Watch the British pound carefully for a breakdown down towards 110 or so, and then, you know, and if you believe that argument, then ask yourself what's going to happen with the British property. I don't have a big thesis on that. What I can tell you in the United States is that Powell wants to hold rates at 5.5% for as long as possible in order to try and reorganize the capital, the bank balance sheets and the lending markets and reorient them towards having a rational mortgage market in the 6 to 7, 8% range and have that be back where it needs to be, because this is how they're going to recapitalize Fannie and Freddie. It's how they're going to recapitalize the banks, and even if a lot of regional banks have to fail in the process. But again, he's also said explicitly, we want you to use the discount window. We're here for you. We're not going to bail you out, but you have the opportunity to deal with this stuff. We're here to work for you and not work for the rest of the world. And if the United States decides to continue on this path, what you'll see is a capital inflow into the United States, which will actually help buoy real estate markets, not everywhere, but in certain markets. I would say anywhere where you're seeing population inflow, and I would say U.S. Southeast continues that way, and a variety of other places. There's going to be some very interesting arguments there. I looked at a small company yesterday morning, actually, for my patrons. This is the last point I'll make. In general, REITs in the United States have been thrown out like baby with the bathwater. All real estate investment trusts have been destroyed. Doesn't matter if it's farmland to timberland to residential housing to commercial real estate. It's all been destroyed under, all those stocks are down tremendously. And some of those are throwing off really nice yields for REITs, like above 4%, above 5% and whatnot. And that makes no sense given this market, right? But I looked at a small real estate company in North Florida, ticker symbol JOE, St. Joe Company, that specializes in Northwest Florida real estate. And that chart has held up remarkably well, which tells you where money is still continuing to flow. So there are pockets of the real estate market that you want to look for. The other thing I would say is look for where the capital is flowing within the United States, and the muni bond markets there will do well while everybody else is getting killed. I wouldn't buy New York muni bonds, but Miami muni bonds, that's a hard one not to sell, depending on the rate. So, this is where we're going to be looking. I wouldn't say I'm looking at those things, but these are the kinds of things that, people who have large amounts of capital to put in, to put place somewhere as like a foundation for some of their portfolio moves, I would consider some of that stuff. And watch those muni bond rates in some of those areas and as a proxy for what's going to happen in the real estate markets there. That's what I would suggest.
So broadly, you're seeing rotation, but not a collapse.
Yeah, not in the short term. Maybe, again, depends on, talk to me in 18 months, Francis, because
No.
I think we're going to see a dollar up wave still. I think the USDX at 105.5 is the beginning of the next bull market in the dollar, up towards maybe a dollar 10, 110, 112 on the DXY. And then, once that gets too expensive, then we're going to see a rollout,
Yeah.
And so we may be seeing, and I think the same problem exists for, the euro in many ways, and I think also for the British pound. The British pound is too expensive. British pound has got to roll over to a dollar 10 or dollar 5, and then that's the only way. But if they're not allowed to have that rollover, then they're being strip mined.
Yeah.
And I do believe also that the UK is being strip mined at the expense of Europe.
Indeed, as we discussed. Excellent. Tom, that's been a great and very insightful. Thanks for sharing your opinions. People that wish to engage with you, how do they go about doing that?
You do so by going to my blog over at goldgoatsandguns.com. You follow me on Twitter at TFL1728, where the worst version of me will show up every day. And you can sign up for the Patreon at Patreon/GoldGoatsAndGuns, where you can sign up for the monthly newsletter, as well as the twice weekly market reports, where I do all of this kind of stuff, plus chart analysis. And Francis and I have a different technical analysis system, but it's kind of it, but we both have come to the same conclusions about the same things using slightly different technical analysis. So, if the macro thesis is right, it almost doesn't matter what tools you use.
100%. Tom, awesome chatting with you. Thanks for being with us. Have a great one, and we look forward to the next time already.
Absolutely, Francis, you be well.
All the best for now. Bye.